to the official Leeds United podcast with me, Emma Jones, and him, Matthew Lewis.
Me.
It feels like we've lost two limbs having no Patrick and Jermaine.
We are 50% thinner this week, aren't we?
Yeah, I feel like there's no Jermaine for us to ignore when he's trying to make a point, and there's no Patrick for you to rip the mick out of.
I mean, I understand that Pat's, you know, we've got a game this week and midweek games, he's very busy, I get that. What's Bex doing?
Well, apparently he's got some other work. Apparently, yeah, he's cheating on us.
Selling nappies again.
Nappies,
what's he doing?
Yeah. He's found his niche now, hasn't he, Jermaine? That's it.
It's just not wetting the bed, that kid, I'm telling you.
Now, I must apologise as well, because I know I sound a bit tinny. I'm coming to you live from the basement of a hotel, which is why I sound like this. Not my voice, they're just the echo.
What, and why are you there? Why are you in the basement of a hotel?
It's top secret, can't tell you.
Oh, I almost got you then, didn't I? I almost got you.
Might be able to tell you next week. It's very exciting. What I'm doing here is far more exciting than the hotel I'm staying in, let's put it that way. But, Matt, let's talk just quickly about the game against Everton at the weekend, because we are going to have a guest host this week, as we don't have any Jermaine and Pat. We are going to get a very special guest host on. But I want to get your thoughts on what was a pretty resilient performance, wasn't it, against Everton?
Yeah. I mean, obviously, we'll talk about this when our guest arrives. I thought it was a good game. I actually thought that Leeds controlled the game really well. You know, we had the lion's share of possession. Still looked a little bit fragile at the back, in a way that we've not looked for. You know, we didn't look for the back end of last season. So maybe that's something that needs to be addressed a little bit. Nothing like panic stations, but just something to be looked at. But beyond that, I thought Leeds were good value for the point and could have nicked the game in the end. I thought Rafinha was absolutely outstanding. It looked like the crowd had given him just an extra gear, which is fantastic to think going forward. It pains me to say, but we're going to have to say that assist from Pat was pretty special as well.
It was.
That was a good one.
Did
a great
hurt,
finish
Matt?
From Click.
Did that hurt?
Yeah, no, it's fine. Great finish from Click as well. So, you know, we scored two very good goals and we conceded two naff goals. And so, you know, once we just tighten up at the back a little bit, I think that we'll be turning those points into 3 points in no time.
And I'm sure that that'll continue to develop throughout the season. What was particularly amazing, though, was, of course, it was the first packed-out Elland Road that we've seen since March 2020. It looked unbelievable. Obviously, you weren't there. Could you not have just got a flight over from Florida just for the day, Matt?
I thought about it, but I am still nursing this broken leg, so...
You're really milking that, aren't you?
Yeah, I am. I'm trying, yeah.
Oh, just quickly, is your leg all right now?
It's almost there. I don't have crutches anymore, and I'm out the boot for most of it. But it's I mean, I'm still limping, but it's getting there. It's been 4 weeks now, so I'm getting there.
And have you replied to Jermaine Beckford's message that he pulled you up on from last weekend's podcast or not?
No, I still haven't.
Because that was your excuse.
Well, I mean, it is still broken.
Yeah, but it's a pointless bone anyway. You said you didn't need it.
No, it is, you're right.
But before we get our special guest on to talk more about this, it was incredible. And you mentioned Rafinha there. I think having the crowd back, having that 12th man, it has a big impact, doesn't it?
Yeah, no, it was big. You can tell from the energy that they were giving, you know, particularly when we scored that second goal. I really thought that the crowd were going to carry him on to getting a winner. I really, really didn't. I think if the game had gone on another 5 minutes, we probably would have found it. It just seemed to give everyone this boost. And I think back to some games from last year. We played a few teams that were really well organised at the back, and we kind of struggled to break them down a little bit. And I think that just having the 12th man, as you say, is going to help us just give us that little bit of an edge, that bit of energy to run that little bit faster and play that ball a little bit better and hopefully on the flip side, put the opposition under a bit of pressure as well. That'll just give us that little gap that we need, that little break, that little unlock that we need to win those games. Those ones that ended up with points last year, or we end up losing to a naff goal, we end up getting the points this season and hopefully that'll continue. And Elland Road will be a hell of a place to come for opposition.
Absolutely banging. And one man who was in and amongst it, in the thick of it at the weekend, who was there witnessing it firsthand, is joining us on the official Leeds United podcast as the guest host. Should we give him a round of applause, Matt?
Yeah, you can ask him about it. He'll know. He'll know all about it.
It's Tony DiRigo. Thank you so much for joining us on the official Leeds United podcast.
You're more than welcome.
Please tell us that the atmosphere was as incredible as it looked at Elland Road.
It was. It was unbelievable. I think it was just great to finally be back and meet some familiar faces. But, of course, all that pent-up frustration came out. And, my goodness, before the game, I actually had my cans on, my headphones on for LU TV, and one side of it actually didn't work. The other side did, but it was so low, I couldn't hear. And the blinking singing that then started, I thought, I'm in trouble here. I can't hear what Bryn is saying. I have no idea. But you know what? Who cares? It didn't matter. It was amazing. You know, it really was. And just to finally see that feedback from the fans to the players, I think was really important for them as well.
I've heard quite a few people say that it was quite emotional, actually, after being away for so long and being robbed of so many fantastic moments over the last sort of 18 months, that this even though it's the first game and of many more, it was quite emotional.
It was, obviously for lots of reasons as well, because the football club is the kind of the heartbeat of Leeds, the city.
Yeah.
And I think those familiar faces, it's really important to feel that community spirit. And we've had, obviously, a rough time for a year and a half. I've been lucky going to the games home and away, but it doesn't mean anything without the crowd being there. And I must admit, I think I hugged more people as well that first game. Are we allowed to hug? I'm not sure.
Yeah.
If we're allowed to hug. Yeah, come on, give us a big hug and a kiss and away we go. So yeah, it was for lots of people a pretty special day.
And Tony, you know what it feels like to be playing in front of a packed out Elland Road. How will, particularly, you know, the new signings, the signings that have played in front of a packed out Elland Road for the first time, how will they have felt in that moment?
Well, they would have been told what to expect. And that's the interesting thing, because I can imagine, you know, Rafinha and Cork and obviously Rente when he comes back and what have you, would have been explained to that the crowd here are absolutely amazing, but they haven't experienced it. And it's okay trying to explain it, but until you've been in the middle of that pitch, and then you hear it and, you know, away you go. And I always used to say, my first game, I ran out of the tunnel. I was 5'9". By the time I got 100 yards, I was 6'2". Because it made me feel so much bigger and stronger. I thought, right, you know, here we go. Let's go. And, I think certainly for me before the game, I said it before the game as well, I thought Rafinha, this is going to be his moment, because he is a player. He's an entertainer. And with that crowd behind him, of course, he had to score a great equaliser.
Do you, obviously, the on our side, you know, when you're at home, but do you still feel, particularly on maybe on your debut or when you're first experiencing a packed out Elland Road, is there a degree of pressure that comes with that? Because although you know that they've got your back, it's 40,000 people, you know, with bated breath. Is there a little degree of nerves that come with that?
There should be, absolutely, and there is. But I think there's more pressure for those high-achieving players to put on themselves. You know, their standards are there to be met. You're right, that many fans, you know, screaming at you, either positively or negatively, right, is not so easy to block out. Yeah. But at the same time, you use it as fuel, you know, to really get going.
Right.
But listen, all I heard was, you know, just positives all the way through that game. And I think that's why it's going to be important this season. At home, we need it to be a fortress, don't we? And I think, yeah, when we do go behind, that's where the crowd can really make their voices heard.
And players like Rafinha, they'll feed on that, don't they?
He absolutely loves it, you know. And the more that you cheer him, the more he wants to just take the mickey out the fullback. And sometimes, I have to say, Dinya didn't know whether he was coming or going. I thought at one point, Benitez had to go on the pitch and unscrew him out of the pitch and returning like left and right. Where's he gone? But yeah, Rafinha was magnificent.
How would you have fancied being up against him?
I'm delighted I'm in the stand watching, I have to say. Well, first thing, in my day, you could actually give him a kick and I'd be kicking him straight away. I'd tell him that what I would say to him is, you know what, I'm going to kick you again and again and again. Go the other side, otherwise I'm going to keep chasing you and kicking you. I remember doing that to Ryan Giggs. I booted him right early. He went on the left-hand side and Mel Sterling said to me, you bugger. He would not go back the other side again.
Brilliant. And Tony, you were alongside Bryn Law for the game. What did you make of it as a whole, the performance?
I thought it was a really good game of football. That's the first thing to say. I thought what a quality game it was. Two very good, talented sides. I think you saw in Everton an organisation under Benitez, which is going to be hard to break down. I have no idea what their big Colombian centre half was playing at. What a weird performance! That I don't know what was up with him. He just was weird all game. Like, you know, the guy is 6'5" or 6", and I'm sure Bamford caught him in an eyelash, and down he went as if he'd got poleaxed. You know, but just some of the things he was doing at certain times as well was really weird. But on the positive side, I thought Richarlison was a really good player for them. And, of course, Damari Gray, he's come back from, of course, Bundesliga. And, wow, a couple of those crosses were superb in the first half and a really good goal in the second half. So they're organised, hard to break down. So when we have gone behind the first time, I'm thinking, OK, we didn't deserve that. But we came back and scored a brilliant goal. And then we had to do it again. So I take a lot of positives from that. In that, with that pressure, as you mentioned, from the crowd, it's a huge day. You know, to lose would not have been a good thing, but to come back twice, I think, is a really good thing against a decent side.
I think it's one of those things that we should take heart from. That I think in the last season, when we played against teams that were well organised like that and were difficult to break down, whether it was that Arsenal at Elland Road or West Ham and Everton, actually, when we played them, we did struggle to find goals, and we found two really good ones at the weekend. So I think that's a positive to look at.
It is, and it had me remembering the game at last season, because it was exactly the same sort of game in that, Everton, of course, went ahead. We had to chase, and trying to break that down is difficult. I think you can look at Wolves at home as well. There's a lot of those type of games, West Ham, where we come a bit unstuck because of it. So, what are we trying to do? We're trying to improve, aren't we, this season? That's the first thing. I look at the game at Old Trafford. We didn't. However, the home game against Everton, let's just leave it there. The home game, we did. We got our point. So we lost the last one against them 2-1, but this time we, 2-2. So that is an improvement. But I think it was just a joy to be there, and to see everyone and to catch up. And it was lots of positives.
I feel as well a particular shout out needs to go to the fan behind the goal who got his stomach out when Calvert-Lewin was taking the penalty. Have you seen that?
I have not seen it, but brilliant. I'm going to watch that. I can't wait.
Those are exactly the kind of characters that we have missed on a match day, aren't they?
Well, they have. And there's so many different types of people go. And even afterwards, I was going back through the tunnel to do an interview by the side of the pitch. And, all the people shouting and saying hi. And it just to see some familiar faces. And, we really have missed it. And I started getting used to actually commentating with no crowd in there. And that's a shocking thing, because it really is. It was awful. It was absolutely awful. And all those performances that we gave last season where there was no one there, I felt sorry for the fans, but also the lads themselves. Because when we play, that's what it's about. You want to entertain in front of those sort of people, and that's what really gets you going. And they've missed that, but they got it back.
I want to talk to you about sort of your career playing for Leeds in a fantastic few seasons. But just before we do, I want to just talk about something you touched on there about, because you were there all season last year, and it was very different, and it must have been very difficult. But you mentioned that there were some games last year that, God, I just wish fans had been there. Is there anyone in particular? And I'm kind of thinking of sort of your Yelp at Man City game.
Oh, I wonder which game that was.
but was there any games that you were just sort of commenting on, and you were, privileged to be there, but you think, gosh, I really wish this game, I wish fans were here.
I don't know where to start, because there's so many of those. There really was so many, but I'll pick out, I can think of three straight off. Right, first one is Liverpool, the first game. You're back. You're against the champions. You're in their backyard, and we're taking the game to them. Their front three kind of were tearing us apart a bit. We thought, forget that. We'll tear you apart instead. And we kept going back and forward. But I'm thinking the crowd would absolutely, love that game. That was absolutely one of them. Another one would have been Villa away. Just, Villa are absolutely flying. And then Bamford scores an incredible hat trick. From kind of nowhere, and they were the team that were really flying at that point as well. So many. Everton away actually was another you know, really good one. I think it was Rafinha again that did he score there? Yeah, so I think so. So, yeah, you know, lots of games where you think, God, I just can't believe what I'm watching. And to see it, you know, live, we know it's different. And there was no one seeing it live. So, yeah, those three for sure.
And Tony, before, as Matt said, because we want to talk about your time at Leeds United, there was a real sort of fitting tribute to the legends of the club, so many that we have lost, wasn't there? And it was really important, I think, that fans were given the opportunity to pay their respects to them.
Yes, and that has been the great sadness, I think, in this last year, year and a half. We have lost some greats, like, you know, absolute greats. And just understanding the numbers of these amounts of appearances these guys have put in for Leeds United. You know, it's been their life, simple as that. It is Leeds United. So Jack Charlton, you know, Trevor Cherry, Peter Lorimer, Norman Hunter, you know, it goes on and on and on, Terry Cooper. It's just, you know, really, really sad. And each of those individually, you know, is worth so much of our Leeds United family love to give to them, yet we couldn't do that. So it was lovely that, you know, that happened during that game. A lot of their families as well were in the Norman Hunter suite. And so that was really nice to see them there. And hopefully they really enjoyed the tribute. But yeah, we lost some great people. We were hit hard, weren't we? Really, really hard.
And, you know, it shines a light on just how special this club is in that it feels like family as much as anything else. It really does feel like family. And for you, Tony, you know, you had a great career and a great time at Leeds United, and you've chosen to continue being in and amongst it. Why is that? Why is this club so special to you?
Because throughout your career, you play for various clubs, and I must admit, I thoroughly enjoyed, you know, playing for each and every one. Who wouldn't? You're paid to play football. Hey, what's wrong with that? However, you look back and see what you achieved then, and I had some great moments at you know, all my clubs, but there was something pretty special at Leeds United as well. And I think to win that title, to go through a whole, you know, season with those guys, the ups and the downs, and finally, you know, achieve something absolutely gigantic at the end of it, it's pretty special. And you have to be a special group, and they are very, very special memories for me. But along with those memories of the players is the memories of the fans as well. And you put all that together, and it's something for me that, you know, it is my, obviously that season is the season of my career. So I have a strong bond. I was here for 6 years as well. And when the club asked me to come back and do a little bit, I thought, yep, I'm on my way.
So that was your debut season at Leeds, correct? When we won the title, and we'd got promoted, had a year consolidating, and then won it. So do you think maybe that could be happening this year?
I see where you're going with that. I see where you're going with that. You should really lay off the loopy juice before you do this sort of podcast. You know that. I think the thing is now, everyone expects progression, you know, absolutely. Yeah. And I'm one of those as well. But I think what you have to realize from certainly the time that that I played to now, you know, the levels between the abilities of the clubs has grown, you know, drastically. And, yeah, and that obviously is down to finances. And I was just talking actually before the Everton game, in that you need to understand where we've had to come from now, from the Championship, and then trying to get through the, you know, those bottom lot, then try and challenge those middle tier clubs, then the ones that want to finish seventh or eighth, then the top six, you know, then to get the top two. You're talking big, big, big steps. And our wage bill last season, for instance, compared to Manchester United, was five times as small. Compared to Everton, it was three times as small. Mm-hmm. So we're batting here, they're batting up there. So we have overachieved last season. We've done great with what we've got. And of course, we want to keep overachieving. That's what it's about. But trying to go, like you say, to try and suddenly win something is going to be very difficult. And of course, we're aiming for Europe, absolutely. Do I think this season is that season? No. You know, we want to consolidate. We want to be a solid team in the Premier League. And then, of course, we're going to build and build and build. But I wish it was that easy, but not quite.
Well, that was one of the things that I wanted to talk about, really, was sort of the differences between back then and now. And you make a great point there. You know, we talked on the show last week about how with the effects of COVID, You know, it takes, I think Angus Kinnear was saying, it takes sort of 2 or 3 years to reap the benefits of being in the Premier League. Add COVID into that, it's probably going to be more like 3 or 4 years. So we've got, you know, quite a bit of time where we've got to consolidate, stay up, and start to build a squad that can challenge these kind of things. But beyond that, what else is sort of different? I mean, is it the intensity of today, the just the sheer level that they're playing at? Is it drastically different from your time?
It's drastically different. It's interesting because we won, of course, the old Division One title. And then the next year, the Premier League starts. And people would say to me, wow, it must have been an amazing difference. No, I didn't even know. It was the same thing. Okay, an extra camera somewhere. Wow, and that was it. You know, so it's not that much of a difference. Now, if you put that same group of players in 91, 92, just like the group of players in the 70s, you know, and you give them these sort of facilities and the advanced knowledge, whether it's coaching, whether it's fitness, whether it's you know, psychology, whatever it may be, we will all get to, you know, that level, and our abilities, you know, will come out. So I just think now what you're seeing is, actually, I'll tell you what I will say. When I first started at my debut at Aston Villa, I played left back, and for 50% of the games that I played, I thought, I'm going to have an easy game today. Why? Because I was an athlete, left back, and half the ones I played against weren't. And I would run past them for fun. And I'd have a cigar on. I thought, this is all rather easy. Towards the end of my career, everyone got really fit. Everyone's an athlete. And now if you look at the Premier League, there is no one that you can think, I'll have an easy day. You know, they're all athletes. They're all to that sort of level, which is quite incredible to see our players go to the next level. I didn't think there was another level, but we've gone to it. And you look at the stats that we produced last season, and the sprinting and all this sort of stuff is mind-boggling. So, that would be a, you know, one difference, certainly.
How do you think the team that you played in would have adjusted to a Marcelo Bielsa coming in and forcing you all to play murder ball and running nonstop? How would that team have? Not, I don't even mean physically. I mean,
would they have put up with it?
Yeah, that's what I'm asking.
I was going to say, where do I start? That's an interesting one because, for one person in particular, Mel Sterling would have been fined every single Monday for being overweight. That's the first thing I've got to say. So he wouldn't have played. You know what? It would have been an interesting one. But when I came into the group at Leeds United, it was such a strong group. You know, standards were extremely high, and that was led by Gordon Strachan. But everyone then, like the Pied Piper he was, you know, had to follow, and training was that intense. It was of a high quality all the time. We had two great youngsters in Speedo and Bats coming through as well, who wanted to listen and learn. And, you know, then Gary Mackey. We had all this blend. And I think, you know, whatever Howard Wilkinson said, you know, we would do. And Strachan would be the leader of that, you know, on the pitch. So there's no doubt, you know, if he said, like Bielsa, right, we're doing murder ball, we're doing this, that, and the other, you know, we would have done it. You know, there's absolutely no doubt. However, talking to the lads now, the current lads, about their training, I'm thinking, you know what, I'm really comfy up in that that gantry there watching this lovely game of football, because it's hard work. It's really intense. But to be honest, you know, I was on the more fit side, so I would have been absolutely fine.
But when you were playing as well, Tony, you were voted player of the year at every club that you played for. What was, I nearly said why, what was the secret to that?
Good point. I had to pay off a lot of people, you know.
But what was the key to that consistency?
Well, you say every club. It was my first four clubs. When my legs packed up on me, then maybe not. But yeah, I'm proud. It was Aston Villa, Chelsea, Leeds United and Torino. So that was really good. I think especially Leeds United fans, but obviously fans all over, they just appreciate, I think, someone that gives 110%. You know, and you may not be technically like Leonardo Messi, but I tell you what, if you just give everything you can, they certainly appreciate that. And I always, you know, tried to do that. And I think as a fullback, I kind of tried to do it both ends of the pitch. And I think earlier on in my career, that was probably a bit less normal. Now, you know, it's expected of everyone. But I don't know, just get out there and give it a good go. Just imagine you're playing as if the biggest fan in the world was putting the shirt on. And that's what you need to remember. So get out there and give it plenty.
Well, I mean, you gave enough that you were also picked to play for England. And I mean, anyone listening will know you've got a native Leeds accent. How did that happen? What's the association there?
Well, how bad England must have been to get an Aussie to play for. That's the first thing. Jeez. Well, it was strange because I would have played actually for Australia. Australia asked me to play for them when I was 18. So I got into the Aston Villa first team at 18. Australia rang me up and asked me to play for them in their World Cup qualifiers. Now, back then, the international calendars were not aligned. So I couldn't fly away for two games and then fly back because then, you know, I would have been playing. So the Australian Federation told me I was going to play Fiji, New Zealand, and American Samoa. Now, I didn't even know American Samoa had a football team. I didn't even know where it was. Somewhere near Samoa, but Americans. Anyway, whatever it was, I'm thinking, okay, this is brilliant. I'm going to play for Australia. I go in and ask the manager, and I just got into the Aston Villa first team at that point. And he looked at me and says, you want to go and play American Samoa in Fiji? We've got Manchester United at Old Trafford, Arsenal at Highbury. Are you flipping mad? I'm going, yeah, good point. Okay, I won't. No, you're okay, boss. And that was it. So I couldn't do it. I then got contacted by England a couple of years later, and they said, listen, you've been here 3 years now. If you just wait another couple of years, you can apply for British citizenship, and we'd like you to play for England. So can you please hang on and do that? So I thought that was the right way to go. And I'm delighted I did.
Who do you support now in a World Cup? Is it England or Australia?
Well, to be honest, it always depends because my father's Italian as well. So if Italy are actually winning, then you know what? I might swap that way.
No, bloody hell.
In all seriousness, very much England. Interesting. When I played for England in the World Cup in 1990, the game I played in was against Italy. So the third and fourth place playoff. And my mum and dad flew over from Australia. And my dad's Italian, my mum's Australian. And after the game, unfortunately, we lost 2-1, and my dad was beside himself with pride because he said he saw his son play in a World Cup. He saw his son play really well and set a goal up for David Platt.
He scored, yep.
And Italy won. I thought, Dad, that's not quite what I want to hear. But okay, all his dreams come true at once. But no, I am definitely very much England. My eldest. It's very much Italian for some reason, which is really annoying during this Euros because, frustrating, wasn't it? That was frustrating. I suppose just about the better side won, but we had our chances. But not to worry, next time, wait for the World Cup.
Yes, Tony.
And you played in Italy as well, didn't you? Was that a bit of a dream of yours?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, interesting now, you've got one or two other players that are going to Italy. Tammy Abraham has just gone to Roma for 34 million quid. I think what an experience, what a learning curve, what an education, and not only football I'm talking about, I mean, off the pitch as well. So for me, leaving Australia was my, you know, big education, but just going to Italy and seeing how they did things differently, their tactics, how they trained, how they prepared, was absolutely fascinating. So, yeah, I certainly enjoyed it. What's not to like as well? Pasta, you know, Prosecco, I mean, cakes. I mean, it was just Ferraris. I mean, it was amazing. Although the football fans were absolutely nuts. That's the only problem. It's just a minor thing because when you lose, you're in big trouble.
A bit like being at Leeds, really? Then, Tony.
Well, that's the thing. That's the interesting thing about it. It was and it wasn't because they're certainly passionate. They're absolutely passionate. But I think Leeds fans, they'll give it absolutely plenty on a Saturday. If you lose, okay, as a player, you're not going to have a very good Sunday. Monday's not going to be great either. But Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, you then kind of forget that and you're building up and looking forward. The Italians forget nothing. You're having a nightmare all week.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, yeah. I mean, we lost Torino. We lost at home on the Sunday. On the Monday, we couldn't get into our own training ground. 1,000 fans had barricaded our training ground. They unfurled banners all around it to say that you belong to us and your heart is us. So if not, leave. So the club in the end had to fly us to the away game on the Tuesday to train. So they are very, very different, I have to say. So passionate in weird ways.
Yeah.
I'm sure that helps you all perform very well on the weekend.
Well, not exactly. I was well pissed off. I have to say, I thought, come on now. This is absolutely ridiculous. And they do things like Retiro, where you go into a hotel two or three nights before the game and things like that. So, yeah, very interesting. Wow. But, you know, tactically, a great education it really was.
And they have good pasta, like you say.
Risotto Parmigiana is incredible. Anyway, go on.
And also, Tony, you've spoken about match fixing in Italy as well, haven't you? What happened?
Oh, God. Yeah, that was the biggest shock to my system, because I thought I was learning the language actually rather well until this one day in training on a Friday, when the owners of the club walked into the changing room and told us that we were going to have a draw. Now, in Italian, you have a present sense, a past sense, and a forward sense. And I thought I got my adjectives kind of mixed up. I didn't quite understand. Are we going to have a draw? Because last week we won, so I didn't quite know what was going on to start with. And then he asked the question, you know, do you agree? And went round the dressing room, and everyone's going, yes, yes, yes. And I go, no. And they laugh at me, and then they carried on. And it was like a hell of a shock. You know, it really was. It was 7-8 games to go. And the team we were playing against hadn't lost at home. So it's an away game for us. And we were trying to get promoted. We were up near the top. But yeah. And then day before, our star player, Gigi Lentini, who was once the most expensive player in the world, he dropped out with a hamstring injury. Cravero, who played for Italy, an Italian international, he dropped out with an ankle injury. Someone else had the flu. The right back, seemingly his mother passed away. Yet after the game on the Monday, it was resurrected and she was absolutely fine. Oh, every God. Bloody one dropped out of this flipping game because you knew what the score was. I played half a game because I couldn't get my head around it. And I came off at halftime. They said, grande, Tony, no problems at all. We drew 0-0 and we lost in a playoff to go up because we got that draw, you know, in this particular game. And what was more shocking for me was that it was kind of accepted. That was the big shock. So I've never come across anything like that in my whole footballing career. But at that time, then that is what happened. And I could imagine, you know, beforehand how things were done. And that's why you look then after that, obviously Juventus got demoted so many points, so many teams got docked, and it's now, you know, it had to clean itself up, but it wasn't an easy thing to do because of the acceptance of things like that would go on.
I've got so many questions, if you'll indulge me. Sorry. On the pitch then, so what was happening? Were your teammates just having stray passes? Was it a really like passive, sterile game? Were you confused?
This was the problem because we had a fantastic striker called Marco Ferranti. He scored 20 goals that season, played for Napoli and Inter and what have you. And he was one of the best one-touch finishers that I ever played with. And I think about 10 minutes into the game, a long ball went up to him. He's a striker. Long ball went up. Their two centre-halves jumped, knocked themselves out, fell down. So he is clean through. And obviously he's now got a decision to make of what he does. And so he goes through and he tries to toe poke it, but he toe pokes it 20 yards to the right, like misses by an absolute mile. And you can hear one or two then whistles in the crowd as if they've kind of half cottoned on as well. And it was just a weird game. I couldn't play in it. I actually went right back as well. I couldn't play right back anyway, but I just couldn't play in this darn game because it wasn't right. So, you know, it was awful. I came off, as I say, at halftime.
Well, it goes against everything that football is about, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. But that's until you understand the culture of football at that time there as well. You know, it was just a different way of looking at things. And that's why, as I said to you before about an education, that's not the good sign.
Yeah.
Lots of other tactically things are very, very good. But towards the end of the season, there would be alliances, you know, between certain clubs and what have you, and these sort of things would happen. And I just found it, like you, you know, absolutely shocking. I've never heard of it before, but it did happen, and quite a lot.
Wow, it's extraordinary. I mean, obviously you hear about, you mentioned Juventus and you know about it, but I didn't quite realize how brazen it was.
Well, that's a good way of putting it. But yeah, and that's the shocking bit. That was a shocking bit. You know, if it's like really hidden and you don't really know what's going on, but no, it was straightforward. Everyone knew, and these sorts of things towards the last 10 games of the season, one or two things like this would happen.
And Tony, I mean, you've used your experience, your career, you know, and beyond your career, you have then gone on to continue to work in football. You do your commentary, you do all sorts of different things. Before we get into that, I just kind of want to know from a mental point of view, how difficult is it to go from almost the great heights of, you know, getting the plaudits or having a game to look forward to every week to then retiring and having to accept that that will never happen again?
I think I found it quite straightforward in that I accepted what I did is time limited. I accepted you're only kind of the best or one of the best for a period of time. Then suddenly things start to, you know, your body starts to slowly give up on you, those legs. And then it's a natural progression. So you have to then look for something else. But I'm always glass half full. There's always lots of lovely, you know, there's a huge world out there to do lots of amazing things. So get out there and do it. I wanted to stay in and do something that I love, obviously within football. And so you could be a manager, you could be a coach, you could be a pundit, whatever. And there's so many opportunities for us now. And so that's the way that I went. But I went into business as well. Had development projects. You know, there's lots of really good stuff. But can you ever replace that feeling in the dressing room? No, of course you can't. But you shouldn't be looking to, because it's impossible. You know, they're really, really special times, something to cherish, to hold on to. But you can't replicate. You give it a good go in different ways, but no. So just find something you really enjoy and put all your energy into that. But again, I'm fortunate because I do love football. And so, you know, I still have that buzz. I certainly got it on Saturday against Everton. That was, that was wonderful. So you just go and do what you can, enjoy yourself as much as you can. And for me, still football is good. A lot of the lads say that you're right. They do find it quite difficult. But there's a load of stuff out there they can do.
Was it important for you to stay in football, though? Just to be in and around Leeds, does that help having like that kind of camaraderie still?
Yeah, for me, it wasn't important to be in football, no, because as I say, I went into business actually for a number of years. Yeah, and I found a lot of enjoyment doing that. Unfortunately, the financial crisis hit in 2007. Great timing that was. but coming back to the football, yeah, I mean, it's just special that, you know, that is pretty special. And it is a family on lots of different levels. I think that's the thing, whether it's players, whether it's fans, even a couple of the staff. One in particular, Margaret Mitchell, I'll give her a mention. She's just retired, and she wants to come and say goodbye to us all, and just little things like that, because Margaret was there when I played back in the mid-90s, early
Fantastic.
90s, and now she's retiring. So those sort of things are pretty special for us, so it's nice to be part of all that.
Thank you, Margaret.
Yeah. Margaret.
Yeah.
and Tony, you're absolutely right. I can imagine to be able to continue to talk about the game that you love, that you've played such a huge part in, must be incredible. And also, it must be exciting for you to see new talent coming through, particularly at Leeds United.
Yeah, it is. And I think, fortunately, because I've had the Italian experience, so I do, as I say now, I do a lot of Serie A because of the, obviously, Leeds United. I do the Premier League. I do Champions League. I've done World Cups, Euros. I commented on the Euros, the one just gone. I did 7 weeks in Brazil. What's not to like, for God's sake? It's absolutely brilliant. And so you then see what, for me, is the best thing for a Leeds United fan is these young lads coming through the academies and getting to the first team. And that is pretty special. And I worked that out nice and early. When I played against Manchester City at Elland Road in my first season, 91-92, when I scored a heck of a goal, if I do say so myself, half volley into the top corner, against Man City. And then some lad called David Batty, I don't know, he came up and he struck, I think it was his first home goal. And oh my God, it was like an earthquake. I thought the roof was going to fall off. I thought it was just a tap-in. His goal was just a tap-in. But you know why? Because they loved him, because he was a Leeds local lad.
Yeah.
And I think that is absolutely tremendous. So that is really important. So we want to keep seeing those players come through. And, of course, the best one we've got is Calvin Phillips, who, what a lad he is. What a good young man he is, I must admit. So everyone should be really proud of him. But, yeah, great to see him playing so well.
That was such a nice question and answer to probably almost wrap it up. But I've got to ask, In light of everything that we've just spoken about with regard to Italy and everything, and with you obviously being around Leeds and obviously being at Leeds when it was one of our most successful periods, I guess the question's twofold really is, what was it like sort of being watching Leeds and being a part of Leeds United when we were doing not so well, you know, when we were in League One and things were not going great and the club looked like it was, you know, on life support. And the second part is, how was it when under one of our previous owners, I can leave him unnamed, but you know, just thinking of your Torino story, I'm sort of around those kind of, that's the ballpark I'm talking about.
I wonder who you're talking about.
How was all that? What was all that like for you personally? I mean,
okay, for me personally, I managed to come back just every now and then to watch the odd game. Back during those difficult times, and the crowd was still, you know, given it plenty, but the quality of the football out on the pitch, you know, wasn't so good. And it got to a point where I knew when the BBC or TalkSport or someone wanted to ring and ask for an interview that we'd cocked up somehow. There's some story, Leeds, it's gone wrong. We've got Dave Hockaday as manager.
It was like every week back then, wasn't it?
Well, I said, you know, Dave Hockaday has just become Leeds United manager. I said, you're kidding me. No, surely not. That can't be right. Even Dave Hockaday didn't believe that he was going to be manager. I mean, there was so many things during that time which were a real struggle because, you know, you want to go on and be nice and positive and you want to, you know, talk about the really good things. But for a long time, I didn't talk about good things. I had to talk about those sorts of things. And so it was difficult. And then finally, we started looking up and, of course, Massimo Cellino and, of course, the handover then to Andrea Radrizzani. We slowly got on the right track. And now, you know, with Marcelo at the helm, it's absolutely flying. And so now I know anytime there's a phone call, right, I'm going to speak for half an hour, if you like it or not, because things are looking up. And that's what's happened. There's so much interest in the club now. And that's what we all, you know, want it to be like, and long may it continue.
Absolutely. And one of those golden boys is our very own Patrick Bamford, whose seat you're currently taking the place of. He's not here. So what do you think of him, Tony?
Rubbish.
Good. That's the right answer.
He's not here. No, brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. What I like about Patrick especially is that he went to Chelsea, a former Chelsea player like I am, for a bit of money from Nottingham Forest, never got an opportunity, then bounced around, you know, a load of clubs. And what Patrick needs and what number nines need in general is a bit of love, don't they?
Oh, Pat does, bloody
they
hell.
Need someone to put an arm around them and make them feel important. And
clearly
Patrick's one of those. He's one of those. But he's but he's found someone in Marcelo Bielsa who you know, believes in him wholeheartedly. And Patrick can then respond and show what he's all about. And he's been absolutely wonderful. So congratulations, Patrick. Well done on your 5-year contract as well. And long may the goals
flow.
Absolutely.
Thanks for that, Tony. I think you'll come back on the official Leeds United podcast next week. Now you've said that. Cheers.
Oh, good.
Tony DiRigo, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us.
More than welcome.
That was fantastic. Thanks. Thank you so much, mate.
Cheers. Thank you.
Now, things are about to get a little bit confusing because we have another Matt joining us. I fear this one might outshine you, Matt Lewis. I'm sorry.
I couldn't agree more.
Now, you might have seen ahead of the weekend's game a powerful video that the club posted in the build-up to it, all about, obviously, the fans returning to Elland Road and just what that atmosphere is going to be like to see Leeds play in the Premier League for the first time in 17 years. If you did see it and hear it, the poem was written by poet and massive Leeds United fan, Matt Abba, who's performed alongside the likes of Paul Weller and The Fall. It quite literally gave me goosebumps. Honest to God, it was incredible. So, Matt, it is a pleasure to have you join us on the official Leeds United podcast. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having us on. I'm really excited about it. Thank you.
No worries. No, thanks for joining us, man.
Your words are amazing. When did you realise, Matt, that you had a talent for them?
I started writing poetry when I was about 17, which I know is a very strange age to get into it, but it was when like Arctic Monkeys and Kaiser Chiefs and Pigeons were all coming out, and a lot of the indie scene that was blowing up everywhere was in Yorkshire. And I really wanted to be in a band, but I couldn't sing or play guitar. So I just started writing lyrics and then doing them without music, which accidentally became poetry, which I know is a bit weird, but it's quite a nice job.
So hang on, is this like your full-time job?
Yeah, I know. It's not the careers advisor ever told me to be a poet, but
I love how you got into it, because you sort of, when you're learning poetry at school, it always feels like this kind of archaic Victorian pastime that doesn't exist anymore. Yeah. And yet it just got, replaced by music. There's even an Alex Turner lyric in it where he says, I pour my aching heart into a pop song because I couldn't get the hang of poetry. And it's kind of what they do is poetry. So it's the same thing, but because I'm not musically gifted either, I'd probably end up having to do the poetry as well. So when you say it's your professional full-time job, what does that entail then?
I do a lot of stuff in schools. I do a lot of gigs, selling books. Sometimes I write commissions for organisations and that as well. All kinds of things, really. But I first wrote a poem for Leeds United a couple of years ago. It was the centenary kit launch.
Right.
Ralph Ineson voiced it, and it was this big like centenary poem. And that's like the highlight of my career, without a doubt. So working with Leeds is a dream come true. Definitely.
Because you're a massive Leeds United fan, aren't you, Matt?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
So when you're asked, for example, to write about Leeds United, I imagine it comes very naturally to you because there is so much passion behind it.
Absolutely. I like to think that I'm able to get the passion across and get what it means for the fans across. The only problem for me is watching my language, because, you know, there's a way you And then if a club are putting it out on their socials, you know, you've got to be a bit, like, even just like slang or nicknames or whatever. But yeah, it's, I never usually write about football or Leeds United. I write about loads of other stuff. So when I get the opportunity to do it, it's really, it means a lot to me. And I think fans can tell, like, if a club were going to say, oh, we're going to get a poet, most fans would be like, what?
Yeah.
But because I'm a natural, you know, proper Leeds fan first, I hope it comes across.
It really does. And you touched on something there as well when you talked about slang and stuff. Do you want your poetry to be of Wakefield, of Leeds, of the area? Do you try and keep it as close to home as possible?
I think the most important thing when you're writing is just to write as yourself. Like you say, a lot of the poetry you read at school, it comes across like really old-fashioned, and it's like ye olde language.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes when people try and write poetry, they try and write like that because that's what they think it should sound like. I just want to sound like me.
Right.
And I am from Wakefield. So yeah, like whilst I hope it's like universal, some of the things I talk about, you should always talk as yourself. I think it's really important to do that.
Do you ever get like word block? You know, like writers, I don't know if there's an official term, but where you're like, I just can't do it.
If it's a commission, I'm quite good at, like, I felt under a lot of pressure, obviously, doing one for Leeds. I'm quite good at working under pressure. But in general, yeah, I go through phases where I write for myself for months. But if it's a commission, I can do it. It's really weird. But yeah, you just got to keep reading and listening. Just keep feeding yourself with stuff that will inspire you. But if Leeds United say, I want a poem tomorrow morning, I will be able to write a poem for tomorrow morning.
Wow.
Because it's Leeds, isn't it? Do you know what I mean? So.
I mean, Emma was asking you there from one professional to another, because you might not know this, but she's actually also a published poet herself.
Matt, it's not something many people know about me, and it's not something I like to brag about, but I actually did have a poem published about the Vikings when I was in primary school.
Nice. And have you written a second one? Are you going to pursue it?
No, it didn't need a follow-up. It didn't need it. That one stood alone on its own.
she'd planned on reading it out today, but then we heard yours and she thought, I can't complete with that.
No, I didn't want to show him up, Matt.
Oh, right. Yeah, no, that's what she said. Yeah.
You should give it a go. Do some Leeds United poetry. Yours would be better than mine, I would have thought.
Right. Can we set you a task, right? Do you reckon you could write a poem about the official Leeds United podcast? Bear in mind, we have Matt Lewis, a.k.a. Neville Longbottom, Jermaine Bedford, Patrick Bamford and myself. Do you reckon there's enough characters there for you to muster up a poem?
Yeah, without a doubt, unless you mean right now on the spot.
Oh, no, don't worry, no pressure. No,
Tyler, but yeah, no, of course.
You can be as offensive about us as you like. Seriously.
All right.
Matt doesn't look very happy about that.
Well, no, I just think, no, it's fine. No, it's good because Emma's going to do one as well. And then we'll see whose is better because you're the two professionals.
Yeah, should we do that? I'll do Matt. And then what we'll do, Matt, we'll read them out. They'll be anonymous. And the guys will have to choose who wrote which one right. to see if I still have a poet within me. Yeah?
I'm up for that.
I am too. I'm excited about this. I'm rising to the challenge. But Matt, were you at the game on Saturday?
Yeah, I'm very, very lucky. I managed to get a ticket. I was there the last time against Charlton in 2004. So wow. to be at that one meant meant the world. As you know, it was such an incredible atmosphere. And it just made me realise how important the whole day is. Like, you know, like nodding to someone you don't talk to, but you see every week, and just the whole thing just got caught up in it all. It was wonderful. Yeah.
I know you talk a lot about sort of positive messaging and stuff, and you're quite an activist in trying to sort of inspire young people. And I was just wondering how it's been, you know, the last 18 months without fans going to games and stuff. It must have been so difficult for so many people. This must be absolutely huge for people to getting back in the ground.
Yeah, it's a lifeblood. It really is a lifeblood. And I think a lot of people who aren't involved in football don't realise. Right. I think they just think you turn up at 5 to 3, lads, yeah. watch the game and then leave. And there's people of all genders, ages, races, backgrounds. It's their life. Like, it's their actual life. And I know it's been tough for the last 18 months. And I think Leeds United, the fact that they started playing again in the July, I think that kept a lot of people going. You know, once we got over that initial lockdown, the fact that football came back, it weren't the same. Well, I mean, for us, it was quite different. But I think that kept people going. But being back in the ground on Saturday, it made me realise that there's no substitute for it. Like, I'm almost not, I don't want to watch football on TV ever again. Like, honestly, it sounds ridiculous, but I either want to be at the game or I'd rather listen to it. I just, it's about the collective experience, isn't it?
If you could bottle that feeling of being at a game, you would sell it for fortunes, wouldn't you? You'd never have to write poetry again, Matt.
I know. You'd sell it for even more than the little yellow flags are going on eBay.
I suppose as a poet, a football stadium is, I mean, it contains the entire spectrum of human emotion, doesn't it? And then as you say there, everyone of every colour and every creed, it just has the entire melting pot of the human condition in a football stadium, doesn't it? It must be quite a bit of inspiration for you sometimes.
What I love about it is that it's a permission to show all those emotions.
Yeah.
So men in particular struggle with, you know, being emotional or crying or whatever. Soon as you step through them turnstiles, it's sort of all right. There will have been people crying on Saturday. And I love that. And in a weird way, poetry is sort of the same because it's what you say things that you can't really say in everyday conversation. So you'll get a poem at a wedding or a funeral, for example, because you can't really say it in normal conversation. And I'm not saying it's the same thing, but I quite like that it gives you a permission to say certain things or behave in a certain way. So yeah, being on the terraces on Saturday, yeah, it was definitely very inspirational. And as you get older as well, like I felt like a little boy going in there again. Like, I'm only 32, I'm not that old, but like you start to get that nostalgia a lot stronger as well, I think.
Matt, we cannot let you go without letting people know. I mean, we're also going to hear the poem, obviously, for anyone that hasn't heard it. But please tell people where they can read your work or where they can hear you.
So my name's Matt Abbott, and all my handles and all my website and everything's just Matt Abbott Poet. So it's quite easy. I used to be in a band, right? And we got played on the radio quite a lot. And everybody used to ask if it was Neville Longbottom singing in the band.
No way.
Okay, I did like spoken word on the verse, and everyone's like, "Is that Neville?" I was like, "No, it's me."
Oh wow! the only person in the world with a Yorkshire accent, apparently.
I know.
That's their go-to.
Well, yeah. we're confusing everyone now, then, boys, having you both on at the same time, aren't we?
It's just me asking myself questions.
Yeah. Matt, thank you so much for joining us on the official Leeds United podcast, and now you are going to play us out with your poem.
I don't have one. I don't.
532 days, 76 weeks, 45,964,800 seconds since this, and even longer since we cheered them together at the top. 16 long years, and we've had our ups and downs. But it'll be right. At least, I think that's what Marcelo said. 5 wins on bounce, not a single goal conceded, top of the league and unstoppable. Or so we thought. But we didn't feel sorry for our sins. It always has been us against the world. And it's never been our DNA to conquer things the easy way. We did it the Leeds way. And boy, did we do it. The new normal became the normal. New rituals, new icons, a new era. Cubs became Lions, Kings became Gnomes. New fans joined us as loved ones left. We've been through it all together. And it's no longer hope, but belief. We'll rise to our feet like the hairs on our necks, and our lungs will be emptied and our hearts will be filled. This is Leeds. Welcome home.